Welcome to the Honeycomb Podcast, the podcast all about New Zealand food and drink and the people that make it happen. I'm Asher Boot, your host and owner of the ramen shop Hillside, Daisies and Bowl. Taking care of all the technical stuff is producer Steve Cochran of Rockwell Productions. On this episode, we're chatting to Claire and Troy of Tora Collective. We talk about setting up an independent fishing company and we try to get our heads around New Zealand's quota management system.
Thanks for joining us, guys.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
Can you just give us a brief outline? What is Tora Collective?
Tora Collective is a sustainable fishing business, so everything is caught by us and everything comes direct from the ocean, which I believe is a point of difference. And that's kind of what we're trying to change with especially the crayfish and pollock industry in New Zealand.
Yeah, and also like over the years being in the industry, we've seen that the fish that stays in Aotearoa is the second grade, third grade fish. And, you know, what our coastline provides, you know, Kiwis and tourists that come to New Zealand should be getting the best of it. And that's where Tora Collective sort of grew from as well.
Yeah, cool. It's exciting. Yeah. So, Troy, you grew up on the Wairarapa coast.
Yep.
So on a farm or a fishing family?
Fishing family. So my dad was a fisherman. We started in Napratiki, which is at White Rock, and then moved to Tora. And, yeah, my dad fished by himself for many years and mum was the bulldozer driver. And so sort of been around the game for many years and, yeah, so learned a lot from him as well.
Yeah, great to be able to sort of inherit, I guess, that knowledge and work from there. And you, Claire, what's your background?
I'm originally from Golden Bay and then Marlborough. So my background before Troy and I were together is wine marketing.
Okay.
So I was working for Jules Taylor down south. And when we got together, it kind of started with a conversation of why isn't there any power and craze on menus? You know, that's the sort of area that I was in. And Troy was a fisherman. So those conversations began. And, you know, I began to learn. We want to educate our consumers that predominantly it was going overseas. So, you know, 99% of crazes goes overseas and the majority of power was bleached and canned. And it just kind of growing up, you know, eating that produce and having that so accessible to us, you know, for me it was very strange that we weren't eating it. And it was the first time I'd really thought about it.
Yeah. And but we were lucky, you know, growing up like that and having the opportunity to have access to that sort of kaimoana, you know, and like to know that the stuff that was, you know, people were eating here, scrap.
That's a really, I mean, I'm going to jump forward a little bit here just because that fits so closely and probably the question that's been on my mind the most for you guys. You know, that kaimoana, that craze and power and that, to me, that's such a part of our heritage. It is the sort of thing that you go out and collect and you have on the beach or whatever. It's such a humble part of our heritage, but it's such a luxury ingredient. How do you tackle that?
Well, the reason why it's a luxury, I suppose, is kind of determined by the price of it, right? Well, that's how we've seen it. And that's determined by the export market. So the export market's cranking, the lease prices are up high. So that means even though we're servicing the New Zealand market, our leases are still really, really high, which means that, you know, we can't sell it for as cheap as we would, you know, like to. But, you know, and it's interesting you ask that question because we're kind of at the point where we're starting the conversation around this. It hasn't really been heard before. So it is all about educating customers on what was happening, you know, why it is, you know, costly and all those sorts of things. So I think education is probably how we're tackling that, you know.
And from that point of view as well, it's, you know, like if you, I think before we were, like fishers gave access like we are to that kaimoana, you know, the prices within crayfish and par would fluctuate, you know, depending on what the export market was doing. So from our point of view, we set a price for the year.
Yeah.
And that's just based off what the lease price is, and then we work from there. So it's not, we're not trying to fluctuate with what the export market's doing.
Yeah.
Can you go into that lease quota sort of thing a little bit more, if you're happy to? Kind of, I don't think everyone understands what the quota system is and how that works. Can you give us a little bit of technical background?
Okay, so say to be a commercial power diver, you need 1 ton of quota, so you need 1,000 kilos. To be a commercial crayfisherman, you need 3,000 kilos to be commercial. So you can either own that or you can lease it in. So there'll be parties outside, say existing families who, you know, their parents have passed it down because they were fishermen. So at the start, the fishermen had the opportunity to buy or were given quota dependent on how much they'd caught. I think it was in the 87, 88 season. And then, so it started with fishers and then it went out and then it went down the family. So we lease quota off families and then, but we own a little bit of ourselves.
That's why we're lucky in terms of we can decide where our Kaimoana goes. So because of these relationships that Troy's parents, you know, made with these families from way back in the day, but predominantly now quota, you know, I wouldn't know the percentage, but I would think at least 85% is owned by a big company. Yep. So, you know, there's a bit of a...
It's about, I think it's about 20% that is independent away from those big corporations.
Okay. And when I'm buying a crayfish from you, say, what percentage of that, your cost, is just that lease of quota or that quota?
You know, huge percentage. Yeah. Majority. I couldn't give you the numbers, and it's quite funny. Well, it's difficult this year because... You know, we were working off particular numbers and then we really had to drop our price. And so, you know, we'd even breaking even, obviously, in your first few years of business, you don't really expect to anyway. But yeah, it's been a pretty crazy year to start. But it's a huge, huge portion of it. Yeah, you know, it's majority. Like last year, for example.
In terms of, you know, lease and fishing costs.
Yeah. I think that's so important to get out. Because I really genuinely don't think people realise how much of that cost is incurred before you even get on the water.
It's over 50%. Yeah. And last year it was, I don't know if this is information we want to give out, but you know, it was $65 a kilo for crays.
Yeah.
And that's just lease. Oh, sorry, 55.
Yeah.
And then you've got your boat, you've got your bait, you've got your, you know,
yeah,
fuel, all of those sorts of things on top of it. So it's not cheap, you know, that you're working
with. And then you've got the outside things, you know, if you something wrong with the engine, blow up an engine, that's, you know, that's...
Yeah, yeah, there's all that on top of it. Exactly. You've still got all your operating expenses and, risk, all that sort of stuff, fluctuations, weather, all those influences. Yeah. But I think, people need, not need, but we hopefully we can get it out there a bit more about that initial cost of what you're paying for when you're buying seafood.
Yeah, and that's what we want. We do really want people to understand. You know, a lot of people, we sold power on our website, and I think the lowest price we had this year was $32 for one power.
Mm.
Everyone's like, what? You know, how can you be charging this? And it's like, we are like on the end of, you know, we are making minimal margins. We're just trying to get it out so we can start celebrating and create the story.
And to have the opportunity, you know, we had to lease in power quota, so we had to have the opportunity to sell it into New Zealand, and you know, like, it's to pull quota from other places, it was to pay more.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So it's still a market driven. The person that owns that quota can basically sell it for whatever is appropriate, what the market's going to pay at the end of the day, and that's what. And is that all fund of that purchasing that quota or leasing that quota going to the owner of the quota, or is any of that government levies or anything like that? It is 100%.
There are levies within, there is.
Okay,
yeah.
No, that's cool.
But it is interesting that, you know, there's not many, well, I haven't experienced markets like that in the business I've been in, that, you know, it's kind of, what are you guys going to get? What's the end product price? And then it's like, okay, well, we want to make this much out of that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I don't really see how that's, like, fair, and also... I don't know, like, everyone's fishing at the moment and no lease price has been set. So there's a lot of people out there fishing on lease, and it's like, we're just going to wait to see what happens and then we'll set a price. And I just think that's a bit...
Mm. Right. And that's the issue with the quota management system right there. It's where ownership sits and who can put the pressure on the people that are doing the actual mahi.
Yeah.
You know, like out there, you know, fishing. Because it began with the fishers, and now with, I could delve into that more, like in terms of, so there was aggregation limits set. So an entity could only own 10% of a cray area. I think power might be the same. But over the years, as companies have got to that 10%, they've like gone to the government and said, oh, look, we need to buy this parcel here because we've had it for so many years. And then the government will allow them to aggregate.
Mm.
And it's happened again this year, you know. And like, it's like beating this drum and no one's listening, going like, how, you know, it takes opportunity away from fishers and small business to have the opportunity to buy it. Yeah. These big companies just can keep aggregating.
But we're so lucky that we have those relationships with these independent families because, you know, we're not held at any helm and we can kind of, you know, say what we want, which we certainly have been saying, and do what we want. And it's,
that's great.
We're trying to change that, what is happening.
Yeah, I find it really interesting. I mean, one thing with, and this is from other conversations with people in the fishing industry, more wet fish, around the stewardship of our fishing grounds and things like that as well. The more you get into a corporation owned, similar to a share market situation, if someone owns shares in a company and then they become the priority of the company as opposed to the consumer, you know, you've almost got a similar situation. If people are just owning bulk quota and not actually fishing, like what care is going into the stewardship of the ocean?
Sure. Yeah. As a fisher, and you know, I'm still young, and people have been in the game for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, and you listen to them and say what they're saying, and like, you know, you can feel it as a fisher of what's happening under there and what the pot pulls are from that time of year to last time, you know, the previous year. And, you know, like science backing that is great, but a lot of the science is built around levies that have been put into something, which and the levies come from generally the big quota owners.
Yep.
You know, so like, you know,
all the science will be ignored. It's like, you know, these are our recommendations, yeah. and then the board decides, oh, look, actually, we're not going to take that, because it doesn't suit us, or we want, you know, we're looking for something else, capitalising from that. So it's,
because there is science being done, but there's been a few situations where we're meant to get, like, it might be an increase in the quota or a decrease in the quota. That's one good thing in the industry. It's like, it does get regulated within the crayfish and the parwa, depending on how the seasons are going.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, if we're meant to get an increase or meant to get a decrease, like these big quota owners who have the big vote can go, we might put this in and say, oh, we don't want it this year.
Yeah.
You know, and like it's hard as a fisher to like sit there and go, so we have no power.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is crazy, being the ones out there doing it. You know, and feeling it and seeing it and interacting, all that sort of stuff. Okay, sorry, we skipped forward a bit there, but when did this all start? When did you guys get stuck into it?
It was winter last year. We started working on it and then, launched in spring as soon as we could start fishing. I think you were one of the first people that we came and visited and, just kind of slowly made our way around and, you know, it's quite hard because we don't really know what we're doing.
And, no idea what we're doing.
You know, you don't have that much faith in yourself and it's like, oh, you know, these like high profile chefs and, you know, and I think it's taken a long time coming, but now we're getting a lot of traction. A lot of people are approaching us instead now because they've, you know, I think humans are a bit like sheep, and once they can see, oh, yep, you know, that guy's and, you know, that girl or woman or whatever are putting their faith in these guys and they're pulling through, then maybe we will too. So it's kind of picking up, which is awesome.
We believed in what we were doing, so that was the main thing, I think, and that was a push, a big push.
Having that confidence is really, really important. And I think, you know, we've seen it. Media reach in the last couple of years, I guess, a bit more around the fishing industry. And I mean, obviously, you know, like Nate with Gravity and some of the things that have been going on there. I mean, Scott is from Awatoto is good at having a yarn every now and then and things like that as well. People are more interested, you know, so that traction hopefully can start going across the board as well. And it's not just independent on you having to go knock on doors and all that sort of, you know, it grows from that point.
And that's the thing, we're working together as well and, you know, communicating with each other in terms of we're all kind of believe we're a part of a particular group of sustainable fishers or whatever, you know, we've got the same similar sort of business methods.
Yeah, we talk to Matt all the time about this, all the stuff, you know, like because that's the way it should be, you know.
And help each other out as well, you know. They're not catching any blue cod, so it's like, oh, can you guys like service these orders? So it's kind of, you know, it's not working, it's not pirate ship anymore. We're not working against each other, it's working together for a common goal, which is really cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's the way forward.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. This whole, we've talked about it before again, but we talked about small-scale farming, you know, more small farmers producing more rather than individuals producing monocultures, but in the fishing sort of sense as well, I can see, you know, so many benefits towards that.
And
that, you know, those images that you see, whether it's Europe or earlier days in New Zealand, so many small boats going out and collecting their thing and being proud of what it is that they provide the community.
Yeah, well, you see that in the wet fish industry now, like, you know, like, especially when it's family-owned businesses, small family-owned businesses, they're just rust buckets, just trying, you know, like a lot of the time. And then, but the big companies' boats are like these, you know,
hugely technology-driven.
Intense. And that just shows you exactly where the money's going.
Yep.
But that's what we're trying to do as well. You know, it's about bringing boats back to the wharf. Or, you know, it may not be literally like that, but that's the sort of what we're trying to cultivate, I suppose, which is, you know, going from coast to plate within a day, you know, or overnight. It's not held in a holding tank. It's fresh, you know, it has all the nutrients from the ocean, from all those minerals and nutrients coming up from the Arctic and the seaweed. And, you know, there's a huge taste and quality difference between, you know, live power and crays that come from an ocean versus a tank, you know, indoors sitting for however long.
Yeah, I never got over seeing cray tanks, like holding tanks, you know, early on as a kid. Boat comes in, straight into a tank, straight into these big water tanks, almost on like petrol tanker type situations where they're hosed in and things like that, and just that process, and you see plenty of dead crays in amongst that.
It's
just the way it is. It's not particularly nice. You guys don't do things the easy way at all. You've obviously set a standard for yourselves in terms of, you know, quality and standards and expectations. Can you walk us through some things? I mean, you know, your size limits or your idea of being able to get the fish to people on the day it's harvested or close to your packaging. Can you kind of go into that stuff?
So we take orders in. And we'll start with that, the fishing side of things, and we'll take orders in, and then we go out and we fish around. It's a really nice way to fish, you know, like it's, you know, like say if I'm diving, I know how many power I need, and I just go through and I pick and choose and, you know, take a few from that one apart and put through there. It's a really nice way to harvest Kaimoana. Same with the crayfish. So once we've got our orders fulfilled, if it's the same day that we are delivering, we'll take it straight to shore. But so we've got holding pots, we'll put them in the holding pots for a day or two. And then when we have the order sale on the Tuesday, we'll bring them from the ocean and then pack them straight out pretty much. Around the fishing as well, we've, like, in terms of sustainability elements, we've, like, increased the female measurement by 2 mil, mm-hmm. because in simple terms, you know, you have more ewes in a paddock, that means more lambs.
What does 2 mil equate to in age or breeding cycle?
I reckon it would be a couple of years,
okay.
probably.
But it's substantial because there are younger fish that have, because it's all done on the width of their top end of their tail, yep. so it's a bit hard to tell. But that's the thing, what we want to be able to do with Tora Collective, and we said from the beginning is, you know, once we start making a profit, we want to be able to say, you know, be putting a percentage of our profit into something where we can be funding universities to do research. Yep. And, you know, so then we can be developing the industry in a way that we see fit, or encouraging, at least changing ourselves and perhaps encouraging other fishers to do so, and taking that to the Creamac or taking that to Fisheries New Zealand and all those sorts of things. So, yeah, we don't want to just be stuck to what we're told to do. We want to be learning more.
Well, it's not about just meeting minimum standards. It's exceeding them and doing something of a high standard.
That's where it came from in simple terms, was that we thought, what's the best way to leave more fish in the water? Let's increase the measurement.
Yep.
And then from there, we can build some science around that and work out what it actually means.
What the facts are. And you know, a female crayfish has up to 500,000 eggs, you know, which is heaps. So we think, you know, if that's another couple of years, that's, you know, really
more crayfish.
But I suppose to simplify what Troy was trying to say before, so with the, you know, holding and delivery aspects, so we fish, say, right up till Monday, and then, say, on the Tuesday morning, we go out and we gather the fish from the holding pots at sea, and then we pack and deliver. So that just makes it easier on us, you know, not having to go out and dive that morning, catch fish that morning, meet the courier and all that sort of stuff. So
especially that we're plagued by the weather, you know.
Yes.
We can't control her or him. So that's why we do that. But, yeah, you know, bring it from the ocean. It's especially this time of year when the weather is all over the place, it's pretty stressful.
Yeah.
You know, like this week on Tuesday, we meant to bring some produce out of the water. Bulldozer broke down. Got stuck in the bulldozer for 6 hours. And then, you know, but we had to get a few boxes out. So I went out, got a couple of orders for crayfish, brought it back, got on the courier. Next morning, went to start the bulldozer that I thought I'd sorted, didn't work again. You know, it's just like, and just, but that's the nature of it, and that's the nature that, you know, to get the freshest Kaimoana to plates around the country.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And then, yeah, following on, I mean, packaging and things like that is something that I've noticed you've really been thinking about.
Yeah, so packaging, I suppose, has always been a big thing for me personally. I could never understand how businesses could be producing such crap. And, you know, the responsibility was on the customer to get rid of it. Or, you know, it's like, well, if the customer wants it anyway, then, you know, they're the ones buying it. But, you know, we should be taking that ethical responsibility upon ourselves. So, you know, down the line, it may not be a reason for some people to buy from us, but at least we can believe in the fact that we are not developing any more trash that's going to end up in the ocean. 100%. So that feels really bloody good, you know, and we've worked hard on it, and we totally limited our business at the beginning only to the Greater Wellington region because we didn't have any packaging that was sustainable that we could ship outside of the region. So we were delivering in our fish bins, you know, which lasts about 30 years. And from there, we've developed it through heaps of different trial and error, using different seaweeds and all these sorts of different things. We're making our own ice packs. So and we don't even think there's any sustainable ice packs on the planet. You know, we've got a compostable ice pack.
We started with making them out of bull kelp.
Yeah.
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 Well, that's what I saw. I remember, I thought that was great. Is that not working, or is it?
Yeah.
In terms of longevity.
Longevity, it probably wouldn't work. If that was the idea, you know, like, you know, how do we make ice packs? Well, bull kelp. But, you know, like, how much beach cast bull kelp is there?
Yeah.
Especially if we start growing. We don't want to cut fresh bull kelp to be, you know, making ice packs. So that idea was great. But then it was like, well, we need to change the direction a little bit.
Yeah, whilst we're growing. So we're working with this awesome company in Mount Maunganui called Salt of the Earth. And so they've just launched their business as well. So at the moment we're using like home compostable, because I think that's a key element, because no one has a 60-degree composter at their home. So home compostable Ziploc bags, which we're filling with like salt water from Tora the night before. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's totally decompostable, but we're developing some more hardy ones at the moment. But the whole beauty of that as well is that, you know, you get salt water arriving with your crayfish to boil your crayfish in.
Yeah, that's true.
Man can't create salt water, and that's the sort of water that you want to be boiling your crays in. You want to keep that water super salty.
So. Yeah, growing up, there was always, you know,
it's got to be seawater.
Got to be seawater. Get down on the beach and get some seawater because we're not doing it in fresh water, that's for sure.
I remember working in a kitchen in Australia. Unfortunately, we sent an apprentice out to get from the mud flats to get the water to boil the mud crabs in. Came back grey. It was awesome. Okay, doing business this way, and it's something that we're considering all the time, because at the end of the day, we've got to make money as a business. You know, a sustainable business can't just be about environmental sustainability. It needs to be fiscally sustainable. It needs to support the people doing it. How do you work through that? You know, making sure you are going to make enough to keep doing this in the long term to achieve some of these bigger goals you're talking about, funding research, showing other people it's possible, all that sort of stuff. Can you walk us through the process? Because you're relatively young as a business, so you can probably give us quite a good timeline or thought, you know, around that.
Yeah, well, we're still waiting for our interview accounts from our accountant. But yeah, we're in such a phase where we're figuring out as we go. We haven't done this sort of back end of a business with, you know, all these restaurants and consumers and so many different levels of customers. So, you know, we've got a lot of costs that come out at the beginning as well. So we're not really sure where we're sitting. And, you know, we're not at the point where we're making a profit yet, but we're just got to kind of be like, okay, well, we believe in it.
Yeah, it's about getting things right first as well. Get it right. And then build from there, you know, like, and that's in terms of the packaging, like Claire says.
But in terms of making a profit, I mean, we can only hope. Mm. But, you know, we've talked about it. We're like, you know, shit, is this ever going to work, you know, with the market at the moment, and all these exports from China aren't happening, which, you know, was our goal. We don't want to be exporting to China, but now everyone's selling crayfish in New Zealand. So like, shit, you know, is this possible? But, you know, we're just going to pretty much, I suppose, keep on going for a couple of years and like make the call. But we believe in it and we want to do it, and like, you know, we're seeing the traction build. So, you know, and we've got to work on lots of things, you know, educating the consumers and all those sorts of things, so we can have our fingers crossed.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of where we are, in terms of making a profit or longevity, who knows?
But yeah, I think, but we believe in it and we can see it. And like, you know, and like Claire says, we can see that traction now that people are getting on board and people are understanding, because like getting that thing across in terms of that freshness coming from the ocean was, it's also like telling the story.
Yeah.
So people understand, like you say, like about the quota and stuff like that, you know, it's having the understanding so people realise what's going on.
Yeah, that message is huge. Do you get any kickback or anything like that from like large scale fisheries? Yeah, cool. You don't have to name any names.
We have. Yeah, hugely. we've had.
Like, yeah, we've certainly had pushback from other big companies and, you know, we were scared at certain points in terms of, you know, how it was going to affect us or what the level was that they were going to go to. And that is terrifying, you know, because we have heard stories in the past. But at the same time, we're like, fuck yeah, because that means we're doing something right.
Yep.
You know, we're so small and we, you know, we only did 500 kilo of power, which is minimal, you know.
Yep.
It might sound like a lot to some people, but it's nothing. Yep. And, you know, we're just a freckle on, you know, but the fact that we're getting pushed back and, you know, people aren't happy about what we're doing, it's because it shines the light on what I think they're doing wrong.
Yeah.
And I think no one's really been around to say that yet. So
we've had emails saying, like, you know, like there are premium businesses out there doing this, and there are a couple, but some of them say they are, but they're not, you know. And I was like, thinking, and I was like, well, then what are we? Are we platinum? Or like, where are we based at in that thing, you know?
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. What I almost think it is the message of there's the marketed premium, right? It's the made up, glossy, fluffy, fluffy thing. Then there's genuine. I think genuine, and I hope I'm not offending you guys in any way in saying that, but that's what I see, you know, from Tora. It's a genuine, but it's the same as Nate. Genuine, you know, that's what comes through. That genuineness, that honesty, and those sort of things can't be marketed. They can't be created. They can't be, you know, they have to be real.
Like some of these, that idea of that crayfish and power that's been brought in through generations, you know, it's all been done off a big marketing plan of, you know, like, but yeah, like you say, you can see it through the people and especially the fishers who are at the ground level, because they understand their environment so well, you know, and they, you know, what's the point in pulling the wool over people's eyes? Because, you know, there's good things happening, and yeah, the bad stuff is, you know, we're happy to talk about it as well.
I always think if someone contacted you and said, we want to come out and see what you're doing, I'm sure you'd open them, like welcome with open arms.
Yeah,
well, that's the thing. We want to be providing transparency for, you know, and we want, yeah, people to see truly what we're doing, ocean to plate. And, you know, this all this cameras on boat business that everyone's, yep. you know, that's now been shut down again, but who knows what, perhaps yep. a big payoff. But, yeah, it's like, yeah, put cameras on boats, you know, and we want to be showing people what we're doing. We're not doing anything wrong, but there is, you know, there is a real bad side to the fishing industry, and we want to show that we're not part of that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the key things, that if you guys can say that, that's a key message in and of itself, because there's a reason why there's not people that don't want cameras on boats, or don't want to, you know, don't want the public turning up at the processing plant. Or
yeah, but
or
the other issue with it was is that, like, I mean, when it first came out, it was like where that it was all going to fall onto, and it was all falling onto the fishers, you know, like, and from a fish perspective, like, you know, like, those margins are already tight, and then you've got to go and put this on, which is like, you know, it doesn't mean that wasn't from a point of view of, like, you know, we need to hide this. It was like another thing, you know, like, you know, like, you know, it doesn't fall on the quota owner, you know, like, it's,
which is interesting.
Yeah,
if you own the value, how can you not own the responsibility?
Yeah.
Interesting. ETNZ, New Zealand, sorry, I'm not meant to say ETNZ anymore. Being part of the Kaitiaki program, what does that mean to you guys, and what's, from a being part of it and being in of it, what is it?
Yeah, we're stoked. I feel quite privileged to have been chosen to be a part of it. They popped up on our radar just as we were starting to, you know, build the business in the background, and you know, there's so much alignment in terms of what they're trying to do and what we're trying to do. So yeah, it's quite cool that we're now a part of that in some way, and excited to be on the journey that it's going to be. And we had the Skype meeting with all the other producers and, you know, chefs and all these other things the other day. And, you know, there's a different theme for each month. You know, perhaps they don't relate to us, or perhaps we don't know much about them, but it's really going to allow us to delve into this in a really authentic way and kind of, yeah, create a connection where maybe one is missing. So we're quite excited about that.
And educate ourselves, you know, especially like even around Matariki, you know, like we have no idea, especially within our area, you know, and like talk to the people from that region, and then, you know, and then it's a full circle. So when we come back to Matariki next year, we're like, we know what this is all about. You know?
And being able to take that step forward.
And we don't want to fake it. We don't want to be like, oh, you know, we know Matariki and that's what this, and that, you know, we're not educated enough to be telling people what to do. So we want to gather information and, yeah, perhaps put on a bit of a hangi next year and like invite all the people that came along the journey with us in the whole Kaitiaki year. So, yeah, it's going to be cool. Real cool.
Exciting. Very good. Lockdown. So this is post-lockdown. How was that for you guys? What that whole sort of, I mean, it's a shock to everyone everywhere. What was did it mean? What happened at Tora?
Crazy.
Because you would have, similar to me with restaurants, you would have been looking back in even February, we were looking at stuff. When did the Cray thing all happen?
Yeah, we got hit first. We were January.
Okay, yeah.
And they got, that's when it first.
Yep.
Because we, you know, we're still doing a bit of export, and, you know, the dream is to be fully all what we bring out of the ocean goes to New Zealand, but we're still building that.
Yep.
So we had earmarked a bit of quota for both.
Yep.
So when COVID hit, it was like it just put everyone into craziness pretty much, and we were just like
craziness.
Craze dropped below the price
did it on purpose so those next 2-3 months were just so full on, you know, trying to work out where we're going to sell stuff, what we're going to do with this, what we're going to do with that, and, you know, and then the crayfish season ends, and the quota season ends in March 31st.
Yeah.
So we had 2 months to sell this quota and try to work out what we're going to do with it. And then the industry within our area is generally like quite a late season fishing industry. So you can catch, but then the fish comes on quite late in January.
Yep.
So, yeah, we had a bit of quota to sell, and then we just got stuck with it. And then the government decided that it would only be a 10% rollover, which was great if you knew you could cover your 10%. So I know there's a few big companies decided not to go for an entire rollover because they knew they could cover themselves from other fishers.
Yeah.
But at least left the family-owned businesses that, you know, had quota in just disarray for a few months.
Because all this quota is being paid up front, right? So it's a lot of money, and then it's like if it doesn't get sold, we're completely bankrupt.
Yeah, that's when we decided to go. We changed the business. We had the idea of going direct to consumers the summer coming, and then it was like fast forward.
Yeah.
So we went to consumers only within the Wellington region where we were delivering it ourselves. And it was great. The support was awesome. And it was such a feel-good thing as well. Like, we're dropping off to people, and like, I remember dropping off to this, I think it was a wedding anniversary, and his wife had brought some crayfish for him. And he drove in the driveway just as I dropped the box off, and it was a cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
So I came back out and and he's just at the driveway just like fisting in the air.
Like. Yeah, there's some good stories. Yeah. Oh, it's quite interesting from a marketer's perspective to be seeing your direct customers, like, yeah, you know, their house, their who they are, but also just building your relationship or hearing the stories. And they were awesome stories. They were, you know, anniversaries, birthdays, you know, when was the last meal that a husband and wife were even going to have together, you know, because one of them was really sick, which was just like breaks my heart. But, you know, it just felt really special to be a part of something and really seeing where it goes.
And I think it also showed like Kiwis as well. Like, you know, like there's a lot of people buying for friends and families, and like, so you know, they didn't know it's coming. And like, it just really showed through like how Kiwis react in times of like need and stress.
Well, and also that speaks to the volume of respect for the ingredients. If it's a gift for someone, that says something to me anyway. You know, you when you buy someone a gift, you really think about what you're getting them and what that thing is. And so, yeah, gifting food is pretty special in and of itself. But particular ingredients like the para and crays is...
Yeah, well, like you said earlier, you know, like it's like the ultimate that comes from our coastline, I reckon, you know, and the crown jewel. So it's like, you know, like giving a couple of jewels to... Kiwi jewels.
That's really cool. And so post, I mean, yeah, obviously developing into that home delivery, have you continued with that? Is that still...
We did for a wee while because so obviously restaurants shut down and we had no other option. So we built the website overnight and went to consumers. And then once restaurants came back up, we saw a huge decline. Yeah. So, but obviously we went back to the restaurants as well. So it kind of leveled out. But yeah.
We stopped in May. But also because, you know, it was crazy. You know, we were just trying to make everything work. So we were like, let's stop for consumers for now and direct back to trade and, you know, carry on what we're doing through the summer period.
Yep.
Because we stop next week. It's our end of our fishing year.
Yep.
And I'll delve into that later about why. But, then we can set ourselves and come back in October.
Yeah, so redeveloping the packaging, building our packing room and all that sort of stuff, kind of getting ready to hopefully, you know.
Go again.
Yeah, go again. And so we'll be doing consumers and restaurants in October. Yeah. But
cool. Yeah. So yeah, well, let's go straight into that then. 2 months off?
Yep. 2 months off.
Is that because fishing's crap or because you need 2 months off or what's the – both?
No, so we stop in August because of the breeding cycles for the crayfish and the parwa.
Okay.
So parwa will start spawning in the next few months and the male crayfish will shell. So they drop their shell and underneath is a soft shell, which they have to harden. So that takes a few months. And then the female crayfish will drop their eggs. So we wait for all that to happen because that's our future.
So is that industry practice or is that a decision you've made?
It's harder to catch them, but it's not industry practice to stop.
Yeah.
It's been talked about, but never happened.
Okay.
So it's an easy decision from our point of view.
Yeah. It's the same with the power as well. We had one of the big companies come out last October and pull out, you know, a lot of their tonnage from Tora right on our back doorstep. And, you know, power is still spawning in October. And so, you know, we made that decision, you know, we're not going to fish when they're spawning and all those sorts of very basic or understandable reasons.
Yeah, when it comes down to the flat days when the power and, that's time to pull produce out of the water. But, you know, it's easy to leave it in there when they're doing their thing.
But that's why it's important, you know, the decision's been made on the grassroots level because, you know, power, there isn't like total agreement in the power industry of when they're spawning. It might be depending on region or whatever, but, you know, you can see the gonads fatten up. You can see them start grouped together. And if you're sitting on a desk somewhere else, you're just saying, okay, this needs to happen, this needs to happen. Whereas we say, okay, cutting it off now, and we get to make that decision, which is the powers with us.
Yeah, but that's also built around where the quota sits as well because, you know, if you're a fisher, and you are only getting paid so much from these quota owners or from the export industry. To make that money, you need to catch more.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the issue, I think. You know, like if it was held within the fishers, you know, like that's what I'm really enjoying is that I know I can don't have to like up my catch in terms of like on a daily basis to make that money, you know, like because we've got that whole circle.
Yeah.
You know, and like that's it's a smart way to fish. And you can see that with, especially in the wet fish.
Yeah,
you know,
it makes a huge amount of sense.
Like blue cod tarakihi, you know, like it's, what, $30, $40, $50, you know, and a fisher gets a minute piece of that.
Again, I've said it before, but I think that message needs to get across a bit more, is where that money is going. Is there any other things that you want to bring up, firstly, in particular, that are on your minds that you'd like to talk about?
I suppose, like, probably relating to that Eat New Zealand thing, and one of a big part of just to know about developing that cuisine culture around New Zealand food, you know, that we are eating, you know, very European style food or American and things like that. So,
finding our feet.
Yeah. And obviously that's a collaboration with chefs in terms of we'll provide the produce and, you know, and whatever it is that you create, it is still Kiwi because it is.
Yeah. For me, that's what New Zealand cuisine is, though, right?
Yeah.
It's what's growing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's quite simple. You know, our water and our soil is what makes what is here.
Mm. Yeah.
You can put any twist, you know, we're a modern multicultural country. There's lots of influences, but if we're using what's here, that's New Zealand.
And that's the great thing about New Zealand as well. We have the diversity in landscape and, you know, temperatures and all that sort of stuff. We could pretty much grow everything.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's awesome.
Well, you take a straight line from where you guys are across the ranges to the opposite coast, the different produce profiles across that line are incredible.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm. Really fascinating. How do we get more New Zealand kaimoana on New Zealand tables?
It's hard because I think, you know, so many fishes are tied into company quota and things like that, and, you know, so they get least what they can to fish. But it's, yeah, if people are independent, then they can have that ability to go out on their own. Why are you laughing at me? Am I saying something wrong?
No, great. I think the government needs to create aggregation limits and put them in place in legislation so they can't change.
Mm.
And then, I don't know how it would work, but then, you know, and put that back out so then, like, if ownership's with the fishers, then Kiwis have the opportunity to buy the best produce off the boat. And it's all off the boat. That's where the best produce comes from. You know, it's not going through people's hands and for it to get to both, you know, consumers and trade.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the most frustrating side of the quota system, isn't it? Like, you're not just catching what's there in your area. You know, you don't go out in your boat and have a look at what's abundant and take it. You can only take what you're allowed to take. You know, in your spot. And that kind of doesn't quite make sense to me from a sustainability point of view anyway. Surely you want to be looking at the water and seeing what's actually available, what's healthy, and that's what we should be eating at the time. I don't know.
Well, we're somewhat doing that. Like, Cremate does that in the regard of the science, right? So it's kind of how much is pulled up in a pot, like, that's all recorded, no matter whether you're taking it or not. Like, if it's undersized, it's all recorded. So that there is a bit of information in terms of, do we take an increase or a decrease next year? So it might be a 17% decrease because there's not much fish in the water. And crayfish generally work in a 9-year cycle. And to be fair, we're quite new to the power industry. So we, you know, we don't, you know, we're out on a whim here trying to do something new. Yeah. But so we're still learning. Yeah, so we don't have too much information. But
they're very similar in terms of that ownership. You know, that's the similarities. There's also science that, like, there's pluralist catchments. So they record parts of where, how much pluralist is being settled in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the basis of it's good there. It's the decision-making element, which is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the money that's being put in, like, the, you know, like, it's the decisions are being made only by those, like, quite honest, there's no outside influences or, like, you know, or you know, like, a chairman that's not part of the fishing industry, you know, and, like, so they have, like, a, you know, they don't have a skewed view because they've got fingers in so many pies, you know, like, it's...
Well, it's all very unobjective, you know, because a lot of the decisions align with the quota owners who are the ones to capitalise off it. So it just doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. Like, at the moment, I'm trying to get a lot of fishers together so we can have a voice, you know, like, within the crayfishing. Go, like, and we have these meetings, but a lot of the fishermen back off because their livelihood's at stake in front of making decisions or calling out or saying something, you know. So
because they're tied to companies.
Because they're tied to companies. So, like, if, like, we can go, you know, we'll do this over here and we'll have a view ourselves as fishers and put that forward instead of them being stuck out.
So you almost need that union, that sort of the overarching body that can speak for
and
the
just
mass as opposed to being individuals feeling like they're putting themselves at risk.
Yeah.
Because we've seen it before and it's happened in the past. You know, people, it's like, oh, see you later then. You're not getting any, at least anything to
fish. Ostracised and that's it.
Yeah.
Okay, so what about cooking? How do you recommend cooking Crays and Pala? What's your go-to?
Just garlic and butter and chili flakes. my thoughts around that sort of seafood is you don't want to overcomplicate and take away that taste because, yeah. you know, like they are what they are and they're special, produce in themselves. Mm. With the pāua, it's about, you know, how you tenderise them. And there's ways to tenderise them without having to boil them for hours and hours and hours and hours, you know. Yeah. Like, you know, it's messy, but it's fun. It's all part of the whole event of eating those produce, you know. Mm. You know, you have a cotton cloth and get a mullet and tenderise it like that. And then, you know, it's an experience for a family as well. And then on the crayfish.
Yeah, the ritual that goes alongside.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Mm. Like we had a couple of guests out earlier this week and they'd never shucked a pāua or bashed a pāua and they were wowed by it, you know, yeah. and feeling everything. Oh, the hill was amazing. We fried up the hua as well and, you know,
yeah.
they were just bewildered by it.
And
they
eat the hua. It's amazing. Yeah. The hua is awesome. So there's like two types. So there's the darker huas, which are like a greeny colour, and greeny. Then there's like a milkier one and they're beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, you know, chop them up, crumb them, you know.
Throw them into a sauce. Yeah.
You know, if your kids don't like the look of it, don't show them and just feed it to them anyway.
You get what you're bloody well given.
Yeah, yeah.
But crays are the same. We've been experimenting with the crays recently. We've been having these cray pops, so like putting them on the popsicle and crumbing them with some panko and smoked paprika and making chipotle mayo. And they've been going down a hit with everyone, you know. It's like finger food and it's fun, it's tasty. But you know, it's the same thing, you know, keeping it simple, boiling with lemon or garlic butter, you know, and on the skillet and then bake to finish it off.
Yeah.
You know, we use seaweed a lot as well. We sell a couple of seaweeds, but, you know, there's, you know, over 600 types in New Zealand and we, you know, exploring them all and using them all for heaps of different things.
I do think seaweed with cray is better. There's natural glutamates do everything for the protein of cray, being that lean
right.
meat that it is, like really does make a difference.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like personally, cray legs, eating a cray leg by using the claw to pick out, you know, that's ritual to me. Yeah. There's something about that. There's everything in, you know.
We've always thought about, like, you know, like at a restaurant, you know, like have a bowl of cray legs, you know, like it's that.
Absolutely.
Get down messy, it's that Kiwi thing, you know, like it's down at a picnic table or down the beach, you know, like, but recreate that in a restaurant form or something, you know, like it's beautiful.
Mm.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else?
I don't know.
Yeah, I like it because we've got a platform right now to, you know, thank, you know, especially like all our trade and restaurants and stuff like that have been with us and understood what we're doing and what we're trying to do. So, you know, thanks to everybody.
Yeah, supporting us, you know, from the beginning. And, I mean, it was a huge risk for them and, you know, and, yeah, thanks for believing in us, I suppose. Yeah. And the consumers as well, supporting us through the lockdown. Like, that was epic. We thought our business was about to die and you made it, you know, you kept us going. So, like, we're so grateful. It's awesome. And we're stoked that we can keep continuing doing this and live the dream.
That's awesome. That's a great message. Hey, thank you very much for joining us. We really do appreciate you having you here.
Thank you, guys. Great to meet you.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to us today. Check out honeycomb.co.nz for information and links relating to this episode. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you'll never miss an episode.